It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Happy to be here with you on a Dynamite Tuesday edition of the program. Be careful out there driving around. If you're out there in the weather, be patient. We'll keep you company all the way to your front door. Let's jump out real quick and check in with our good friend Breaking Brett Jensen on Twitter at Brett_Jensen. Joins us now on the line. Brett Jensen, so it sounds to me like at least one of the vaccine-producing companies is making it available to youngsters. What's going on now, Brett?
So, Brett, they've been doing these clinical trials for a long time. As a matter of fact, one of the places they were doing the clinical trials with Pfizer to see if it would the impact on children and make sure it was okay with children. One of the places that they're doing is actually in Greensboro, North Carolina. So this is something that's been going on for a while, and early indications show and that kids who take it between the ages of 12 and 15 have a 100% efficiency rate, meaning you don't get the virus and you don't show any symptoms. You're 100% good. And that's phenomenal. That also goes into the fact, which is why so many people were so upset at so many school systems, including CMS, which fought this tooth and nail from August until just recently in March, that, look, we know kids are different than children. You know, all the teachers that were having these parades, literal parades in Union County, where little girls, 6-7-year-old girls, were holding up signs that said, "Please don't kill my mommy," because she was a teacher. Driving a hearse down the middle of the road in a parade, saying that you were going to kill teachers. Well, guess what? We've known for a long time that that's not the case, that the children do not give it to adults. Adults are actually the ones giving it to children. So the fact that children react to this differently should not surprise many, that 100% efficiency rate for Pfizer, which is incredible. And they're going to keep looking at lower ages, just like we do with the polio vaccine and the measles and everything else. But the big thing is the FDA, Brett, is expected to approve this early next week.
Right.
And I believe even President Biden's going to speak about it, I believe even today, if I'm not mistaken. Or if not today, then sometime before the end of the week, about Pfizer and 12 to 15-year-olds and then just the entire pandemic in general. But so that, I mean, that's kind of a big news. That, you know, again, 100% efficiency rate, at least in the early trials. I haven't seen the latest data, but that was at least in the first couple of studies.
Now, look, we will take phone calls, no doubt, people who are resistant to get the vaccine. And obviously, everybody's going to make their own decision. But is it safe to assume that adults that may be hesitant to take the vaccine will also have teenagers and children who are not then also going to be accessing the vaccine as well? What about that level of concern from people?
You know, and that's a great point. I mean, if a parent does not want the vaccine, then I think you can rest assured that the child will not be getting the vaccine, because the child can't get the vaccine without the parent's approval. But again, the virus will impact the child differently than the adult. So if the 12-year-old doesn't get the vaccine, it's going to be fine. It might get it, and it might have flu symptoms for a while, for a few days. But by and large, they're going to be fine, assuming they don't have an underlying condition of like diabetic, or they already have cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, something like that. So assuming they're just an average kid, they're going to be fine. They're not going to die because of this. And so. But that you can't always say the same thing for the 40-year-old parent.
Sure.
And so, while odds are they're going to survive, you know, odds are not 100%. I mean, they vary. So, if the child who's 12 years old doesn't get vaccinated, you know, that's not that big of a deal compared to an adult.
You want to hear something kind of unbelievable, just to kind of appending to this, and then I'll let you skedaddle. You ready for this, Brett Jensen? I just saw this story move. So the oldest of the millennials are turning 40. Okay. The oldest of the millennials are turning 40, and 44% of older millennials already have a chronic health condition. That feels like a large number, like obesity or some other underlying condition. I mean, that feels like a large number, 44%. I have to believe that with these, and this is where I'm going to editorialize and I'll take your take here. I have to believe that with all these gyms being shut down, outdoor spaces being shut down, you name it. This has had a deleterious effect on people's general health, setting aside the fact that they're not going to the dentist, they're not going to doctor's checkups. Everybody was kind of knocked back a year, year and a half from that. But that's got to really exacerbate these underlying conditions.
Yes, you would think, you know, and again, for people who don't know, millennials are generally the ages between 24 and 37 right now. Mm-hmm. That's the mm-hmm. ages of the millennials. Might even be up to 38 at this point. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, so you still got a, you know, half of them are still in their 20s. And so the fact that they're having chronic illnesses,
yes.
and while not being able to go to gyms, you know, may be part of it, mm-hmm. you know, but what, how many, one out of five, no more than two out of five millennials probably go to a gym, mm-hmm. if that.
Well, you can't. I mean, they were locking them down. You couldn't go in there. That's the problem.
Right. But my point is, like, there weren't – it's not like – you're still having a very high percentage of people who aren't going to gyms. And so it's just an odd that to be that young and to already have chronic conditions, that's – you know, mm-hmm. especially since that's the generation of avocado toast. So, yeah, that's – That's
okay. All right. Well, you listen. Shots fired from Brett Jensen. So let me ask you this.
But my point is, they millennials generally eat healthier.
I know. Yes, they do.
They eat healthier than I do. I promise you.
They have a lot of like muesli and pimento cheese and you know things like that. Here's the question for you on the way out the door. It's a survey question. You can take it any direction you want. I got 40 seconds. Are you ready?
Okay.
I'm Brett Jensen. If I have one piece of fitness equipment in my house, it is a blank.
A 12-ounce curl.
Very nice. That works well. I would have thought you'd be a rowing machine guy.
No.
Okay, bonus question, then I'm going to
Boomer. You know what a 12-ounce curl is?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
The bonus question on the way, because I got to go to Boomer to get traffic. The bonus question, you ready for this?
Okay.
I'm Brett Jensen. I would or would not ride a recumbent bike on the streets of Charlotte.
Oh, there's no way.
Me neither. Thank you. Brett Jensen, you've restored my faith in humanity.
There's absolutely no way.
Have a great rest of your day, man.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom. That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
Appreciate you being there. News Talk 1110 at 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. 704-570-1110 is the phone number to be a part of the conversation. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to pivot over to this push for Universal Community College and what might be behind it. I think I've uncovered some interesting stuff. Let's start, though, with Frankie. Frankie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brad, it's Frankie from Detroit. I just got my second shot. I'm over here at Tuckasegee and Freedom right now.
Yes, sir.
And I just pulled out of line because I've already got my shot. And my granddaughter wanted me to get them, and I'm happy I did because I just feel it's better safe than sorry.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And look, everybody's going to make their own decisions on this. Every time the issues of COVID vaccines come up, I get a mix of calls, right? I get a mix of calls that say I'm not pushing it hard enough, and I get a mix of calls that I'm essentially a sellout because I'm encouraging people to take a toxic vaccine. That's some of the talking points I get. The reality is, people want to be pro-choice. Choose how you want to go with this. I mean, it's up to you. It's your body. It's your choice, and you figure out how to do it. I got one. I got the J&J. I freaked out a little bit after I got it because, you know, it was like 2 days later. They're talking about the blood clotting problem. So I was a little panicked for a number of days. But you know, I feel fine. And like you said, I view it as better safe than sorry. And I'm sure, you know, that folks will be calling me and telling me that I've altered my DNA and I'm going to become a cannibal running through the streets late at night or something. But, I'm willing to bear that.
Thank you, Brett. I appreciate the show, man.
I appreciate you being out there, Frankie. Thank you. Call anytime. I mean, that's the thing, right? That's the deal you got to kind of look at is you got to make your own decisions. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. You know what's best for you. That's why we're adults. So let me set up this conversation that we're going to be getting into here in a couple of moments, because I'm really, really puzzled by this sudden push last week in the what is essentially the State of the Union address that Joe Biden gave, in which he laid out this vision for all these different spending approaches. Right, we're gonna spend on infrastructure. We're gonna spend on nationalizing the voting systems. We're gonna spend on high speed rail and tunnels. We're gonna spend on universal pre-K. We're gonna spend on community college. We're going to go K-14 now instead of K through 12. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We're going to go pre-KKK all the way down to like age 18 months, right? We'll go 18 months all the way to age 23, right? That's going to be the education experience in our country. So it's not just going to be pre-K. It's going to be 3 years before kindergarten, and we'll start there and then work our way forward. And that's what we're going to be doing in terms of the education in the country. So here's the thing about this. Like, what motivates that? What is it that's driving that? Because that's being driven for a very, very specific purpose. And I'm gonna dive into that in a matter of minutes, and I want you to listen up, because I think there's some compelling stuff here that people may not be thinking about. As somebody who I got a college degree, my wife got a college degree, my daughter's in college right now, my son's in high school, and I'm looking at this, I'm saying, okay, education's a good thing, but it all depends on what you want to use the leverage for. You're going to leverage student loans or cash flowing an educational experience by paying for it while you work. What are you attempting to achieve on the other side? A degree in philosophy? Are you trying to achieve a degree in something that's going to get you a better paying job? Well, then, you know, that's certainly a gamble that you can have a conversation about. But before we get into that at the bottom of the hour, let me tell you about this. There is concern, and I've got Steve Moore coming up on the Thursday edition of the show, because he penned a piece over at townhall.com. Why did Biden's Census Bureau add 2.5 million more residents to blue state population count? Apparently, it looks like in the wake of the release of these census numbers that have come out in this last month or so, that some of the numbers are getting maybe a little massaged. I don't want to say cooked. I don't want to say crooked, but maybe at a minimum, a little massaged. He notes in this piece, we've been tracking the annual population migration changes between states since the last census in 2010. Over the past decade, New York lost about 1.3 million residents on net to other states. This does not include immigration, births, and deaths. Still, this is a population loss that is equivalent to 2 or maybe 3 lost congressional seats. But the final numbers actually added 860,000 seats to the state of New York, roughly twice the population of Buffalo. And
one morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom. That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
Rochester combined. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT, Brett Witterbull Show. Great to be here with you on a rainy Tuesday afternoon. Let me jump on the phones real quick and take this call from Elena. Hi, it's Brett Witterbull. Welcome to the show. How are you, Elena?
Thank you very much. I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
So regarding to the plan that the Biden has and the Democrats about the education, it's really not education. It's to indoctrinate everybody, you know, since they're maybe 3, 4, 2 years old until 20, because we already saw our education system, so-called education, how they indoctrinate and our kids don't know nothing about the Constitution, nothing about history, nothing about anything. So I think this is sound very good when you say education.
Yes.
But it's really indoctrinating.
Okay, I think you are largely right in that regard. So stick around. You're going to want to hear this, okay? I appreciate the call, Lana. Here's the thing to understand. There is only one reason why you want to do a bailout if you are the government. It's like, why would you want to bail something out if you are the government? The reason why you would want to bail somebody out or bail something out is because it is failing. That's why you do a bailout. You don't do a bailout for success. You don't bail out Google. You don't bail out Facebook. You don't bail out Twitter. You bail out stuff that was failing. Like, we remember what happened with the UAW bailout and Chrysler and all that went on there, right? We remember General Motors, the General Motors bailout and the UAW back once upon a time. You only bail out when there's a failing taking place. So let's look at this for a second, because I've unpacked a lot of this and doing my own research, okay? There are, and I'm surprised by the low number here. Do you know that in the United States, there are about 950 public community colleges in the United States? That to me sounds like a very low number. I would have thought it'd be like 2,000-3,000. But it's 942 public community colleges. That's as of 2020 here in the United States. And so what do you have coming out as part of this proposal, this $2 trillion proposal that Biden promised last week during his speech at the Congress? He wants to bail out community colleges. That's really what he wants to do. He's telling you it's going to be a free education. He's telling you it's going to be a free education. And that's important to understand, okay? But here's the deal. Even going into the coronavirus world, the lockdown world brought to you by Mandy and Roy and the Gretch that stole Christmas and Murphy and Cuomo and Evers in Wisconsin and weirdo Gavin Newsom in California, even going into all of that with the lockdowns, there was already a downward trend occurring at community colleges across the country. The National Student Clearinghouse Research Center reported a 9.5% decline at community colleges nationwide, and it was being compounded by the acute socioeconomic effects of the pandemic on students, okay? So what is it that's driving down community colleges? It's declining interest for a variety of reasons. There are people who look at a community college, they think it's not quite up to snuff as it relates to a public or private university or college. Now, I don't agree with that. I think it is a smart way to knock out a bunch of credits in an affordable way so that when you go to college or you go to a university, say for your major or for your upper level classes, you know, you've paid a lot less for courses that are exactly the same. I promise you, writing 101, sociology, anthropology, psychology, all those cores, Western Civ, you take that at a community college, it's just as good as what you're going to get at the big university, except you're going to pay $135 a credit or $88 a credit versus $2,000 a credit at a university or college. And so, like, my advice, broadly speaking, would be go to a community college, knock out all your credits over the course of a year, year and a half, and then go transfer to the college and get the stuff you need for the major that you want to pursue. It's an economical way to do it. So I am 100% in support of education, and I am 100% in support of the 100% in support of in those endeavors, right? I have no problem with that at all. But here's the problem. Jill Biden is a community college administrator. She is somebody who works with the community college universe. So, of course, her husband, the president of the United States, wants to make sure that something a little special gets taken care of for those community colleges out there. Thus, the bailout. Now, full stop, pause right there. Just stop right there for a brief moment, okay? How would you rate, broadly speaking, the quality of public education in the United States? Would you give it an A, a B, a C, a D, an F? Well, what would you give it? Would you give it a pass or a fail? Broadly speaking, right? Broadly speaking, obviously there are phenomenal school districts in the United States. There are terrible school districts in the United States. But overall, what do you think the value of public education is? And I'm not saying, like, do you think your kids should go to school? I'm saying, what is the value you get from a public education? With a pandemic shutdown, you probably are saying, it's pretty important. The kids were sitting at home. They were messing around all day on the computer. They were kind of Zooming half the time. The other half the time, they're playing Fortnite or GTA, or they're playing Minecraft or Roblox or whatever it is the youngins are doing. So an education's important because it keeps the kids off the streets, keeps them off my couch and out of my kitchen. You know, I want them there in the school learning stuff. But in terms of performance, when you match us up against other countries, is our public education system that good? We're consistently behind Singapore, consistently behind Japan, we're consistently behind Northern Europe. You know, we come up short in a lot of ways, and it makes me not happy to say this because this is Teacher Appreciation Week, and I have a massive appreciation for teachers. I thank teachers on a daily basis. I really do. I think they do an incredibly important job. But I'm talking systemically. If you make community college free and anybody can walk up and take a community college class without any skin in the game, without having to pay a nickel, dime, or penny, aren't you basically now creating an extended public school system that will not be valued in the same way that you might value a class because you're paying money for it? See, this is how this all moves. And now, when you factor in some of the other statistics that are out there from even a few years ago, well, it starts to make you want to scratch your head a little bit. Joe Biden, my contention is this. Joe Biden is attempting to do for community college what FDR did with the New Deal. He wants to create the new community college deal. He wants to create the new college deal. What he's going to create, though, is an endless pipeline of public dollars going into these institutions without any accountability as to education. And if you think CRT is a problem in your high school or middle school, wait until these publicly funded institutions at the community college and university level start making that a key component of their curriculum, and your kids are now being forcibly indoctrinated, as Alana said. We'll continue the conversation straight ahead. I'm Brett Winterbourne.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom. That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbourne Show. So why are we looking to bail out community colleges? It's essentially what it is that Biden is offering up here. And again, none of this has anything to do with my opinion of community colleges. I support education. I think it's a terrific way to get an education. But I wonder about the way it is we're going to have this play out. There's a piece over in Politico that says Jill Biden leading the way on community college tuition coverage. Right? Biden is calling for increased Pell grants to make education more accessible to low-income students during the joint address to Congress. Well, we know that we're seeing an increase in funding for black colleges, historically black colleges and universities, tribal colleges, minority-serving institutions. Those are all part and parcel of this conversation. But there was a study done back in 2014 or so, which I know it's a number of years back, but just to give you an indication of what the conversation was going like back then, I think it's worth looking at this. The contention was this, that by 2030, over 50% of colleges will collapse. That was the contention. Overhead costs are too high, even if the buildings are paid for. And all the money-losing athletic programs are dropped. The costs associated with maintaining college campuses, very high. Utilities, insurance, phone systems, security, maintenance, repair are all costs that drag things down. Substandard classes and teachers. Many of the exact same classes are taught in thousands of classrooms simultaneously every semester. The law of averages tells us 49.9% of these will be below average. Yet any college able to electronically pipe in a 1% teacher, a top 1% teacher, will have a better class than 99% of the other colleges. Meaning online learning will be a competitive option. And you notice what happens constantly. You hear people, especially the progressive left, run down online schools. I think online schools are fine, especially when it comes to getting a degree or an advanced degree. Increasingly visible rating systems. People have online rating systems. You know what schools are good. You know what community colleges are good. You know what colleges are good. Inconvenience of time or place. Yes, classrooms help us focus attention as the world runs on deadlines. But you have to go there from 7 to 9 at night or 7 to 10 every Wednesday night to be part of that experience. Again, you see the mobility of online learning. Pricing competition. Students today have a lot of options for taking free courses without credits versus expensive classes with credits. credentialing system competition. You've got that as an issue out there now. And relationships formed in colleges being replaced with other relationship-building systems. Social structures versus sitting in a college classroom. So why is it that Joe Biden wants to bail out the community college system? And then that would be a first step towards eventually free college for everybody? It's very simple. It's because if you create a system wherein you're going to get a free community college education, if you create a system wherein you're going to get a free college education, and then some mean, awful, evil Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan type Republican that throws old ladies over cliffs in wheelchairs, if they come into office and say that they want to cut that spending, now suddenly you have Antifa on the street lighting everything on fire. You doubt me? Watch a politician go out in public and say, we need a 20% cut to the education budget on the federal level. You will literally have Antifa manifest in their dining room and light their house on fire. That's what will happen. When you've got an army of Randy Weingartens out there in the AFT, they got enough power to alter the CDC guidelines for reopening the country. You will never be able to put this genie back in the bottle. You got a better chance of putting toothpaste in a totally flat tube of toothpaste with a bungee cord and a coffee filter. Good luck. Let me know how it works. So what are we doing? We're creating need. The thing the Democratic Party does best, and I mean this in sincerity. I'm not running anybody's politics down. But the thing the Democratic Party does better than anybody is the creation of dependency. They did it beautifully in 1964 with the Great Society program. And it's been trillions of dollars in the making ever since. They have done a spectacular job of creating that dependency. Now, let me give you the ugly reality. I always feel loath to talk about this because I feel like people feel like I'm comparing you to the ex-wife. The analogy is comparing you to the ex-wife, because here I am in Charlotte. When I talk about California, it's like the ex-wife. No, California is the great learning laboratory for everything you don't ever want to do. So in California, they made community college like insanely affordable. It's like $15 a credit. Raise your hand if you've been in college. Raise your hand if you know what it's like when you need one class or three classes and you go to sign up and there's no room in the class. And you're like, yo, I just need this biology class so I can graduate. And they're like, we think it might open up in 3 years. So what am I supposed to take between now and then? When you make something cheap, what happens? When you drop the price, what do you create? Insane demand. If I have an iPhone and I tell you this iPhone is for sale right now, this is an iPhone 12 Pro Max, blah, 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 and I'm going to sell it for $14, what do you think happens? 92 people show up at my house and tackle me for the phone. Price is a break on demand. The reason why the iPhone's $1,049 is because if they make it $149, there's not going to be any iPhones to sell. There's going to be a run on the iPhone. So you create a price point at which you get, what do you get? Come on, let's do it economically. Equilibrium. You have an equal amount of demand and supply, and you have enough room to cut the price to boost the sales if things start to flag, and you can continually sell that product. That's what pricing functions as. Most people who are progressives and liberals and Democrats will say, price exists to gouge poor people and to kill your customers. No, it's not really true. It's not really true. So here's the problem. You're going to have a massive influx of demand. You are going to have an inability to get the classes you want unless you move to an online model. And then it's endless, right? But don't think for a minute that the big time, heavy duty, fancy schmancy universities like Duke, like Yale, like Stanford, like Dartmouth and Harvard, don't think for a minute they're going to cut their prices when the government subsidizes the education. They will raise their prices and make you take out more loans because that's how they function. They call themselves nonprofits. Explain to me how Harvard is sitting on like a $9 billion endowment as a little nonprofit trying to just get by in a cold, cruel world. So at the end of the day, Joe Biden wants to subsidize community college and public college education because he knows full well that the closest thing to eternal life is a federal program. It never goes away. It never, ever goes away. 704-570-1110.
You're out here hustling, but you're also using the McDonald's app to have your favorites delivered to your door. That's hustling smarter. Order McDelivery in the McDonald's app. At participating McDonald's.
It is the Brett Winterville Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Wonderful to be here with you. Be careful out there driving around. We got storms. We'll keep you company, though. And I will go to the phones here in just a moment. But if you're just joining us, we were kind of unpacking. I was unpacking for the audience this long-term plan that Joe Biden's got to fund, publicly fund, community college and, of course, college education. You know, they've got a what do they call it? One of those things where you a petition up that has been signed by a million people who are demanding free college tuition. They're demanding forgiveness of student loan debt, which, I mean, that's fine if you're doing it now. But what about those people who paid off their student loan debt because they felt like they were responsible people? I mean, what do they get for that? Give me a break. I think you ought to be able to just write off your student loan debt completely from your income taxes. How about that? Just write it off completely from your income taxes. That's what you ought to be able to do. Treat it as an underperforming investment. Treat it as an investment loss, because most people who got a degree are not in the field that they thought they would have gone into. Anyways, so let's just do that. In moments, I'm going to share with you the percentage of remote workers refusing to go back to the office. We are living in a weird world. But before I do that, a lot of people want to weigh in on the community college end of things, publicly funded universities. Let's talk to Joe first up. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, I listen to you every day and I enjoy your show.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, my son went to high school in Catawba County, and mm-hmm. he was invited to participate in a Promise Scholar program through the local community college.
Sure.
When he graduated from high school, he had 28 hours of college credit.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
They were recognized by the University of North Carolina school system. Mm-hmm. And when he went to University of Charlotte, mm-hmm. he was a first semester sophomore.
That is great. See, that's how you do it.
And it cost $99 and books were free.
Wow. See, that's the way you do it. That is being smart, because now you're not going to come out on the other end, you know, saddled with you know, $100,000 in debt, unless you're, you know, going to go to medical school or dental school or law school or get an MBA.
And I encourage other high school students, if their mm-hmm. high school has this opportunity, mm-hmm. it's a no-brainer.
Absolutely. Advanced placement stuff, that program, that is a smart move, because what you're doing is you're saving yourself time on the other side. And that's a big deal. Instead of graduating at 22, you graduate at 21, or instead of 21, you graduate at 20, and you are primed and ready to start taking on the world.
Bingo.
Great. You raised him well, Joe. I appreciate you telling us that story. God bless you and your son. That is outstanding, my friend.
And you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Be well. That is Joe checking in. Let's go to Stan next up. Uh-oh. Stan's looking for a very interesting solution. Stan, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Brett?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, okay. Well, so with public education, I just want to give you two statistics.
Sure.
Washington, D.C., 59% of people actually graduate.
Mm-hmm.
In 46 states, getting a high school diploma will not get you into the college. So why would you want to fund community college when what the government is already doing with education is not even going to allow you to go to college? Why would you take something that is totally dysfunctional and only make it bigger and more dysfunctional? The only choice that we have in this country is to allow people to choose their education, which means private. Now, if you want to, like, give some form of government money, let the people control that money to get the education mm-hmm, of their mm-hmm, choice, mm-hmm. that is fine. But defunding mm-hmm. public education and the teachers union as we know it is the only option we have. Otherwise, the country doesn't exist.
So I would make one exception with what you're saying. I mean, I see what you're saying. I would have one exception, though, and that is because some places in this country, the community college also functions as the vocational technical place where you can learn skills that are not, you know, it's not an, you're not getting an English degree, you're not getting something like that. You're learning actual, you know, HVAC or mechanics or things like that that you can actually go and turn around and in 6 months or a year go start working in that field. So in that case, I think it's very much worthwhile. But when it comes to the way things are moving, you've already answered the question yourself, Stan, because what you've said is since the public schools are underperforming, it slides upward, right? It slides upward to the community college. And if you make college completely free for everybody, you're going to have that increased deterioration. And what will happen? What will happen? What will happen at the college and university level will be the same thing that happens in schools that are failing. People move away and send their kids to increasingly either private or elite institutions of learning because they don't want to get the shoddy education.
And so what we're creating is a system where the people who have money get an education and the ones that don't, which is why public education was created
exactly
in the first place.
That is exactly right, Stan. See, this is the problem. You can go chase it by pumping money into the system, but you're still going to end up in the same place. All right, Jim, welcome to the show. What's on your mind? What did you want to say about community colleges today?
Yes. Hi, Brent. How are you?
I'm good.
The UC system, the university system, I know firsthand from the UC system, had become so bloated and bellicose.
Mm-hmm.
The faculty and the senior tenured professors and stuff don't leave because of the salary they're getting, unless for the most part, unless one of them passes away. So there's a lot of frustration in the junior faculty, and they're all going to community college. They're actually getting almost about the same amount of pay to be there. Now, what's basically happening is they're filling up the community colleges now with their operatives, you know, their Marxist operatives that are reporting back and saying, hey, we can do the same thing here and to these colleges as we did to the university system.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, you couple that with a lot of the kids that are actually their field operatives, their NFA operatives, and you have a volatile mix.
Well, you do have a volatile mix. But here's the thing to remember. I appreciate the call, Jim. Here's the thing you got to remember about the education institutions. Do you know that on average, if you look at a professor's salary adjusted for inflation, it has not increased since 1970. Do you know where all the money is in education? All the money is in that mid-level dean of diversity and sports training, associate dean for the development of internets and stimulus. I mean, all that kind of stuff. Those mid-level dean, not the president, not the AD, not the lower-end teachers, but the actual, that mid-level management, that's where all the bloat is in the education systems around the country. Plenty more.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom! That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
Straight ahead. News Talk 1110 at 99.3 WBT. It's good to be here with you, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. All right, 65% of remote workers do not want to return to the office. Hold on, I have to take a moment. I'm being very emotional. My name is Brett Witterbull. It's my show. I never thought we would... I remember just a few years ago, there were stories that were printed routinely in business magazines and newspapers like the Wall Street Journal. And do you remember what they would say? Well, you have no idea what I'm going to say, but you'll remember when I say it, that Americans never use their vacation days all the way. Americans are workaholics. We just work, and we don't take our vacation days. I don't think, and I'm not bragging, I'm just being honest, looking back across my life, I think other than being married and taking a honeymoon and having my kids, well, I didn't have the kids, obviously, but becoming a father and staying home with your children for a period of time, I don't think I have ever used all my vacation days ever in the entirety of my working adult life. And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. Most of the time in my 20s, I didn't have any money to go anywhere. And I didn't really, you know, want to use a credit card and go stay at a beach someplace. So I don't think I've ever used all my vacation days. And so there was a time, just like in the last couple of years, go back to 2019, we were this incredibly hyper-competitive economy, and now we got these people that don't want to go back to work. And I think we know why this is. I think we know why this is. By the way, this is coming out of the World Economic Forum. You know who that is, right? You know who runs the World Economic Forum? Raise your hand, raise your hand. Klaus Schwab! Klaus Schwab runs the World Economic Forum. He is the guy whose brainchild is the Great Reset. He wants to do the Great Reset, where you live in a little hovel and you are provided income by government, and they give you a bus pass to go where you need to go to purchase your non-meat comestibles, so you can eat your gruel and all that kind of stuff, right? Oh, are you here? Yes, I'm here for my case of Soylent Green. Mmm, delicious. It's people. A survey by Flex Jobs shows 65% of people working remotely during the pandemic want to continue working remotely. Why? Well, they're not commuting, and they're saving money. Although the World Economic Forum was looking at this and said, it's working from home is significantly preferred. The survey also highlighted some disadvantages, such as overworking and tech problems. In a survey by job listing site Flex Jobs, an astonishing 65% of pandemic remote workers said they wanted to keep working from home. I'm sorry, 65% of what group of people? Pandemic remote workers. Are we still pandemicking? You know, at the end of World War II, the people in London didn't still go down into the tunnels of the subway in London because the Germans were no longer bombing. At some point you said, okay, honey, we're coming up out of the tunnels. We're going to go back to our lives. We're going to clean up all this rubble, and we're going to get back to living our life. So I understand that 65% of pandemic remote workers, but if you're no longer pandemicizing, or if there's no longer a pandemic, and I know there's problems like India that are terrible, but you've got 100 million. I mean, come on, you got 100 million people getting the jab. You know, things are getting back to it. I mean, did you see JP Morgan Chase coming out and saying, Jamie Dimon's like, hey, get back to work. Goldman Sachs saying, hey, get back to work. By the way, last I checked, Walmart, the big box stores, they've been working the whole time through the pandemic. It's impossible to buy and sell pipe or fences or azaleas from home. I mean, you can't do it. You got to go over there to the big box store and buy the stuff that they're selling. I can't buy a tarp. I mean, I could order from Amazon. So you have these people who don't want to go back to work, physically go back to work. 58% said they would even look for a new job if they had to go back to work. Well, where do you think you're going to go find the job? Your dining room? If you want to go get a new job because the old job wants you to go back to work, you're going to have to go job interview at the new job. And they're going to want you to come in and sit down with human resources and fill out all the paperwork. And you're going to have to make all your elections and you're going to have to do all that kind of stuff. And who likes that paperwork? Just go back to your job. 2%. Only 2% said they would prefer to return. My life is so sad. You know, you want to know who it is in every company that wants to go back to work, like that physically wants to go, they miss it? It's Dwight Schrute from The Office. That's who wants to go back because he misses Michael. And that's what it is. A third of respondents said that, 11% said the remote work's not essential to them. And a third of respondents are naming it as their preferred mode of working. So there are people who want the hybrid approach. Now, why does the World Economic Forum run this article? Because the World Economic Forum is intimately connected not just with the Great Reset, but they are also intimately connected with the global climate change stuff. In fact, you may have seen one of your favorite young political types, you might have seen Greta Thunberg, who's making the rounds again, talking about how dare you and the climate is changing and how dare you. they believe that the answer to climate change is to keep having the economy run the way it did during the pandemic, when 100 million plus American workers were sidelined and were not commuting and not riding subways and not taking buses and not driving cars. But the reality is, at some point, the economy has to go back to work. 24% of pandemic remote workers has a designated home office. 34% created a designated workspace. The wish to relocate to a different area, a move that roughly a third said they would make, while another third entertained the idea, could lead to more working space for some. So there are people, and maybe you know them, there are people who during the pandemic left town and didn't tell their employers that they moved. Are you aware of this phenomenon? So there are people who are like, hey, I know you think I'm over in Indian land, but we actually moved to Vermont. And now if you need me to come in on Monday, I got to start planning. I can't just be called in for a quick meeting. We're going to have to do something about that. We're going back to work. We are going back to work, folks. Now, maybe you're somebody who doesn't want to go back to work. Maybe you're somebody who, and I'm not saying you don't want to do the work. I'm saying go physically back to the office. I'd like to hear from you. If you do want to go back to the office, I'd like to hear from you.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom. That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
News Talk, 1110 at 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll go back out to the phones here in just a moment. But I was struck by something that I saw late last night. It was Bill Milugan, who is a reporter who has joined Tucker Carlson's Fox News Channel show. And he had a piece of video that was released by a Los Angeles County Sheriff's officer who had a run-in with a woman he had pulled over for using her cell phone in her hand while driving. And he pulled her over and wanted to get her license and registration, do the sort of things you'd get. And he was going to write her a ticket for her using a cell phone while driving. Well, this woman is a teacher or a professor. It's vague based on what she claims, at a college or a university. Her son is in the car. And as the police officer approaches the vehicle, this is what some of it sounds like.
I pulled you over because
you're a murderer. Yes, I started to record because you're a murderer.
You can't be on your cell phone while you're driving.
I wasn't on my phone. I was recording you because you scared me.
You can't use your cell phone while you're recording.
I can record you.
May I have your driver's license?
It's at my apartment.
Thank you.
And I'm perfectly legal, and I'm a teacher. So there.
Congratulations.
Murderer. You're a murderer.
She calls him a murderer about 30 times in the interaction. The officer is nothing but professional. She demands his supervisor show up on the scene. The supervisor does show up. He is equally professional with her, totally respectful. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. No, thank you. Yes. You know, all that sort of stuff, which you would expect from professional police officers. But for the fact that the officer that you hear her interacting with initially here has a body camera on. And it's a body camera that is not department issued. They're still rolling body cameras out. I was shocked to hear this, but apparently they're still rolling body cameras out in that part of the L.A. Sheriff's Office division. He bought his own body camera. He wears a body camera. He's an officer, been an officer for 15 years, and he paid for his own body camera because he does not want there to be any question about what may or may not happen as a result of an interaction with a citizen. Over the course of about 2.5 or 3 minutes, I didn't want to belabor the point. She continues to refer to him as a murderer. She says that he wants to murder her. She has a son. Her son is in the front seat with her, and she's absolutely abusive and disrespectful, going out of her way in a number of ways to be abusive and disrespectful. At one point, at the end of the conversation, as he's handing her the ticket, she crunches it up in her hand and throws it in the back of the car, and she informs the officer who just gave her the ticket that he is Hispanic and will never be white. I mean, I don't know what that has to do with anything. This officer was nothing but professional the entire time. What I worry about, though, is that this is a person who is self-described. You heard her say she's a teacher. So she has some degree of influence over over young people, whether they're college students, community college students, high school, middle school, primary school, whatever it is. This is a person who clearly is just looking for a fight. Well, pause it there, because we found out at the conclusion of this, and we don't know what her name is. Her name hasn't been released as far as I've seen anywhere. We know that at the conclusion of this interaction, the woman who was being abusive to the officer went to the Internal Affairs Division of the L.A. Sheriff's Department and filed a complaint against the officer, saying that he was he acted inappropriately and was intimidating. She is apparently known to the department, because this is not her first rodeo when it comes to harassing law enforcement and making false complaints. I would hope that that department, by the way, that that department would go to a district attorney and would file charges. There has to be a penalty. You would expect there would have to be a penalty for filing a false police report. I mean, if I lied about you, or you lied about me, or we lied about somebody else, and it turned out to be a lie and they wasted resources on running that down, one would hope that this is a person that would be held to account for filing that sort of stuff. But, you know, there was a story over the weekend that said the University of Minnesota Student Union has a very prominent member who is encouraging people who are students at the University of Minnesota to make false alarm reports to the campus police, because they want to teach the campus police a lesson. What that lesson is, I don't totally understand, but it's certainly something that I think is beyond the pale. Take your thoughts on that piece of audio as well. 704-570-1110. Let's talk to John, who wants to talk about this working situation. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brett. Wonderful listening to you, as always.
Thank you, sir.
Just wanted to say, yeah, I've been in the office every single day since this whole COVID lockdown started, but everybody else has been working remotely. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, someone would come in, but I would get calls every single day saying that their computer isn't working, and can you try to fix this? And, you know, I'm not even an IT guy, so.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it's not bad. I mean, some people would come in, you know, maybe once a week or every other few days or whatever like that, but it'd just be nice to be able to have. I mean, everything else is set up pretty well, and but it would be nice to be able to have people start coming back into work a little bit. So,
are you getting the sense that people are enthusiastic about coming back, or is there some resistance on some level of people, you know, not wanting to come back to the job, to the office?
I think it's kind of mixed.
Yeah,
I think it's more likely that they, you know, prefer. Of course, I mean, it'd be nice to be able to stay home and, you know, just roll out of bed and you know, get on your computer and not have to, you know, fight traffic or weather or things like that.
Right,
so,
right.
But it is what it is. So.
I think it's interesting. I think it's an interesting set of circumstances. I got to believe that there are a number of companies who would love to be able to just shed the responsibilities of commercial real estate and all that overhead and infrastructure and have people work remotely. The problem is, you know, at some point you do have to get people together somewhere. And I think, you know, it can't be at a fast food joint. You know, you got to have a place to everybody get together for a meeting. You know, that's,
you can't really mail a cheeseburger into somebody.
No, right? You can't. That's right. That is right. Good stuff. Yeah.
I got one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead, please. Sure.
You know that Colin Kaepernick was kind of made taking the knee at events.
Yes.
You know, popular and trending up. But you know who the first athlete was that took a knee?
No, who's that?
Tonya Harding.
Oh, my gosh. That's an oldie but a goodie. I appreciate you being out there, John. Holy cow. That's the Wayback Machine. Tonya Harding took a knee. Oh, boy.
You're out here hustling, but you're also using the McDonald's app to have your favorites delivered to your door. That's hustling smarter. Order McDelivery in the McDonald's app at participating McDonald's.
Boy, the liberals who can't quit lockdown. Progressive communities have been home to some of the fiercest battles over COVID-19 policies, and some liberal policymakers have left scientific evidence behind. Lurking among the jubilant Americans, venturing back out to bars and planning their summer wedding travel, is a different group. liberals who aren't quite ready to let go of pandemic restrictions. For this subset, diligence against COVID-19 remains an expression of political identity, even when that means overestimating the disease's risks or setting limits far more strict than what public health guidelines permit. In surveys, Democrats express more worry about the pandemic than Republicans do. People who describe themselves as, quote, very liberal are distinctly anxious this spring. After the vaccine rollout had started, a third of very liberal people were very concerned about becoming seriously ill from COVID-19, compared with a quarter of both liberals and moderates. According to a study conducted by University of North Carolina political scientist Mark Hetherington, 43% of very liberal respondents believed that getting the coronavirus would have a, quote, very bad effect on their life, compared with about a third of liberals and moderates. What about right-wing wackos? Last year, when the pandemic was raging, scientists and public health officials were still trying to understand how the virus spread. Extreme care was warranted. People all over the country made enormous sacrifices, rescheduling weddings, missing funerals, canceling graduations, avoiding the family members they love, hiding from the family members they loathe. I added that in, sorry. To protect others. Some conservatives refused to wear masks or stay home because of skepticism about the severity of the disease or a refusal to give up their freedoms. But this is a different story. It's about progressives who stressed the scientific evidence and then veered away from it. So you have a group of people who have now basically adopted the lockdowns as almost like an article of faith. I said this when I was in on the Limbaugh show last week as a guide host. I said it's become readily apparent that the masks, you saw it there in the Congress, everybody in that building had been vaccinated. Everybody had been vaccinated. And yet everybody is distant and wearing masks. I said last week, and I've heard it picked up in popular press, that the masks are the new MAGA hats. They're the MAGA hats for the left. Trump supporters wear MAGA hats. The people that hate the Trump supporters wear the masks because they're trying to say, see, we're unified too. Otherwise, how else are you going to know each other? The coexist bumper stickers on the bumper of the car? You can't walk around with a coexist sticker on your head or your shirt, but you could do it with a mask. I mean, that's the thing, man. I mean, that's what you got. But we're making progress. So why are you still sticking to these, at least kind of ancient routines? Like, why are you sticking with it? Scientists, academics, and writers who have argued that some very low-risk activities are worth doing as vaccination rates rise, even if the risk of exposure is not zero. After Emily Oster, an economist at Brown University, argued in The Atlantic in March that families should plan to take their kids on trips and see friends and relatives this summer, a reader sent an email to her supervisors at the university suggesting that Oster be promoted to a leadership role in the field of genocide encouragement. Is that really is that a department at a university? Genocide encouragement? Give me a break. So she wrote a letter. I mean, she wrote a piece that said you should take your kids on trips and see relatives this summer. Some goofball writes a letter to her supervisor saying she should be promoted to a leadership role in the field of genocide encouragement. Far too many people are not dying in our global current pandemic, and far too many children are not yet infected, that reader wrote. With the upcoming consequences of global warming about to be felt by a wholly unprepared worldwide community, I believe the time is right to get young scholars to follow in Dr. Oster's footsteps and ensure the most comfortable place to be is white and upper middle class. You know, they got a name for that area. I've used it before. Whitelandia. That's what they're talking about. And it's funny because this is Brown University, which Providence is a pretty interesting town, but I mean Rhode Island by and large, or Red Island as they say, you know, that's a whole other animal altogether. So you've got these people that are like, they're treating the lockdowns like you have to keep doing this, like you must not have fun, must be upset at all times. This reminds me, I remember the joke in The Simpsons 25 years ago. We have to be careful. After all, we're living in the age of cooties. Remember that? I mean, this is just absolutely nuts. And what have you seen? What have you seen? Well, you've seen these towns have to give in to these crazy progressives. Somerville, Massachusetts. You notice this is all like in New England, right? This is all crazy pinko leftist Bernie land. Somerville, Massachusetts. Kids still at home. Contractors are conducting an in-depth assessment of city school buildings, leading to proposals that include extensive HVAC overhauls and the installation of UV sterilization units and even automatic toilet flushers. Renovations with a proposed budget of $7.5 million. Now you know why all that money had to go to the schools, don't you now? The mayor told me that supply chain delays and protracted negotiations with the local teachers union slowed the reopening process. Quote, no one wanted to get kids back to school more than me. It's people needing to feel safe. We want to make sure we're eliminating any risk of transmission from person to person in schools and carrying that risk over to the community. Oh, my gosh. You poor people. You poor people. You must be exhausted from just from all of this gnashing of teeth, rending of garments. What are you doing? In March, Erica Utterhoven, the Democrat Socialist State Representative for Somerville, of course she is, compared the plight of teachers to that of Amazon workers and meat packers, and described the return to in-person classes as part of a, quote, push in a neoliberal society to ensure over and above the well-being of educators that our kids are getting competitive education compared to other suburban schools. This is what happens when you take sports away from a culture. I'm just telling you, folks. Live your life. Life's a context.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom. That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Hour number three underway. Welcome. Great to be here with you. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110. 99.3 WBT. So there's a number of big stories that are out there moving, and I want to flow through some of this. If you want to weigh in on any of the stuff that we've covered so far, whether it's the funding of community colleges, whether it's the cooking of the books when it comes to census numbers, whether it's the conversation that we had about whether or not we can reopen and what's going on with the progressives who continue to stick exceedingly tightly to the notion of continuing the pandemic lockdown stuff. I mean, that's all fair game stuff. But let's go to something that I think is incredibly interesting coming out of all places, Washington, D.C. Many people in this audience, if you are a veteran, I salute you and thank you for your service from the bottom of my heart, because you have sacrificed so much. We are free to have these conversations on the radio. But this, to me, feels like it is something that is unnecessarily punitive that is taking place that will impact a very important commemoration celebration there in Washington, D.C. The Biden administration has blocked the use of Pentagon parking lots for Rolling Thunder. AMVETS hosts its annual Rolling to Remember motorcycle parade in D.C. every year to honor prisoners of war, POWs, and missing in action, MIA, veterans. The group had previously received approval from the Department of Transportation, the Department of the Interior, and multiple other state and local authorities. This is according to Congressman Daryl Issa. But the Biden administration's Department of Defense has now formally rejected a permit to continue that special annual event in Washington, D.C., making it significantly more difficult for veterans group to hold their memorial parade. The Pentagon had previously allowed them to have the permit. Now, why would we cancel that event? Like, what would possibly be the upside to canceling an event that would be honoring the annual POW MIA ride? Like, why would you do that for? Well, Joe Chenelly, who's the National Executive Director of AmVets, said the permit revocation means for the parade that there are no options with as much space and convenient routes to the memorials, meaning it'll be more difficult, disruptive, and expensive than if the Pentagon parking lots were available. The administration included AmVets in this new group as a trusted voice in communities across the United States, but the Pentagon will not even have a conversation with them to share their concerns and give us the chance to address them before deciding to refuse our application. Rolling Thunders often use those Pentagon parking lights as parking lots as their staging area, where riders will arrive and set up before rolling out, riding from the Pentagon to the various war memorials located along the National Mall. The Department of Defense's rejection makes it more difficult for them to do this. Congressman Darrell Issa said the Biden administration's making a terrible mistake by blocking a veterans charity from the use of the Pentagon parking lot for Rolling to Remember POW/MIA Remembrance Motorcycle Ride. This last-minute rejection, the first of its kind in more than 30 years, leaves patriotic veterans without a safe alternative. And so I just kind of wonder, what is this exactly? What is this? I think I know what it is. I think I know what it is, and I hope I'm wrong if my suspicion turns out to be correct. I think what they're afraid of is we don't need a bunch of veterans rolling into Washington, D.C., all fired up when we're talking about just in the last 4 months, the insurrection at the Capitol. D.C., I know what they're going to say. They're going to say pandemic, protocols, social distancing, not safe, got to be safe, got to be careful. I believe this is genuine fear being demonstrated by the executive branch, probably being seconded by Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, not wanting to bring any of those veterans back to D.C. because the last time they were gathered together, ... draw your own conclusion. I may be wrong, but I think it's a bad look. I think it's an embarrassment for the U.S. government to not allow this to take place. But I'm not really surprised. I'm not really shocked. While we're talking about that day, let's talk for a moment about Ashley Babbitt. Ashley Babbitt is the young woman, a veteran, who lost her life there on January 6th when she was killed by somebody in the speaker's lobby as she was standing in an open window there during the protests. Sinclair Sunday TV program Full Measure with Cheryl Atkinson investigated the murky story of the fatal shooting in an interview with attorney Terrell Roberts, who represents Babbitt's husband, Aaron. She's not brandishing a weapon, said Roberts, analyzing the video showing Babbitt being shot by a Capitol Police officer. So he's shooting an unarmed individual who's not assaulting him or threatening him. If this case happened out in Minneapolis or another place and it wasn't politically charged, I think people would see this as an obvious case of excessive force. Ashley Babbitt's part of a crowd, Roberts noted. Then you see some individuals, they do get physical, they start to hit the door, break some of the windows. There are three officers present at that point, and they move out of the way. Roberts was asked why it was the police and SWAT team didn't better protect the door to the speaker's lobby. It's exactly what we're going to try to find out, he said. Why was that? We'll find out, but it's clear what they're doing, that they're actually abandoning the door, and at that point, they then start they fire and they kill Ashley Babbitt. It's important to note, as Robert Tufano has noted when he's sat in with me, that when Ashley Babbitt was shot and killed, there was a tactical squad behind her of Capitol Police that were making their way up the stairs as she was being shot in that doorway. One false shot, one bad shot, and those officers could have been struck behind her either by a through and through wound or of course, an errant round that would have taken the life of a Capitol Police officer responding to the scene. Plenty more straight ahead.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom! That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. Great to be here with you. 704-570-1110. Be careful if you're out there driving around. We'll keep you company all the way home. After my show, we'll have Charlotte at 6. So you got plenty of time to spend time with us here on WBT. Let me go out and talk to Tom. Tom, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today, sir?
So you were talking about the Biden administration not wanting
Rolling Thunder.
The Pentagon's parking lot to be used for whatever somebody wanted to use the Pentagon's parking lot for. And it was seemed like a patriotic kind of thing that they're not letting them do.
Yeah.
It's the same administration that's got Christie Noem going to sue them because they're not allowing fireworks at Mount Rushmore.
You know, that's a great point. I'm glad. You know what? I didn't even think to connect those two, Tom. And she was talking last night about having to sue the federal government. I think she was talking to Hannity last night. And she's talking about how, hold on, here's the cut. Cut number 13, Chris. This is cut 13. This is Christie Noem last night. Who talking about how we're not going to have any of these fireworks at Mount Rushmore. Fire that up.
We had a memorandum of agreement already signed with the federal government, with the National Park Service, the Department of Interior, to have the celebration at Mount Rushmore again this year to celebrate our nation's independence. And the Biden administration refused to give us the permits that we needed to do so. So I filed litigation and lawsuits against them to get them because they didn't give us any reason for denying us the permits. It appears to be political and punitive, and so I'm going to fight this in court.
How are you not allowed to have fireworks at Mount Rushmore on the 4th of July, Tom?
Isn't that insane? You know, it's like there's somebody in the Biden administration sitting back and saying, how can we poke them again? I mean, how petty.
You're right. He said if we got the shot, we could have the 4th of July.
They're just being obnoxious for the sake of being obnoxious.
Oh, gosh. You know, the Rolling Thunder event is something that a lot of veterans look forward to because it commemorates our POWs and MIAs, which we don't otherwise typically do. And so now you got me thinking, Tom, you got me thinking. This feels like purposeful eye poking by a very unconfident administration here. This is ugly.
Exactly.
Man, good point.
Exactly.
It's a great point. I appreciate you checking in. Be safe driving. Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to tell you.
Yeah.
You made me miss a turn a couple times several months ago. Because I turned on the Rush Limbaugh show and the voice was there and I thought, what the hell time is it? I'm looking at my watch instead of looking at my directions.
That happens from time to time, in fact.
And then I find out that it was my very own local guy on a Rush Limbaugh show. I was so proud.
Oh, thank you, man. That's very kind of you. Well, I'm going to mess you up tomorrow morning because I'm in for Bo Thompson. So don't be all messed up thinking.
God.
Don't be thinking you woke up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You have a panic attack, you know?
Exactly. All right. I can't jump this radio anymore.
That's right. Well, that's it, man. Be careful out there, Tom, and you keep in touch. And I'm glad you checked in with us. That's a really great point. I mean, you look at this and you say, hold on a second, what are we going to do here? Let me go to David. David, welcome to the show. What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, how's it going?
Going well, thank you.
Whether they allow her the permit or if she sues and loses, sues and wins, I don't even know why she's suing. Go out there and shoot them off. What are they going to do to her? And I think, if she does, Donald Trump should show up and be there with her.
Have him light off one of those big rockets. You know what? Do you remember what they did last? Do you remember what last summer's 4th of July display was? Do you remember where it was?
No.
It was Mount Rushmore. Trump was there.
Oh God, that's right.
They had the big salute to heroes and the whole thing, and it was an incredible display, and he gave a speech. You think that's why Joe Biden wants to cancel it?
Absolutely. And he doesn't the reason he doesn't want the bikers there,
mm-hmm.
How many Trump flags do you think that those bikers are going to be having on the back of their party?
And shirts and hats and there may be some Biden banners as well, if you know what I'm saying. You know, just
exactly. And the other thing,
mm-hmm.
there would be so many red hats there.
Yes.
The visual would be awful for those people.
Now, wait a minute. Can I take another run at this for a quick second? Because you spurred something in my mind, David. Are we sure Biden would be against the fireworks, especially considering where do the fireworks get manufactured?
Delaware?
China.
China. Oh, God, that's right.
You don't think?
He would not want the fireworks going off because, you know, he goes to bed at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. And they would just wake him up.
Good stuff, man. I appreciate you being there, David. Holy cow. All right, here's Bob. Hello, Bob. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Brett. I think David just stole my thunder, pun intended. But I believe the underlying reason for discouraging the Rolling Thunder in D.C. and the fireworks display in South Dakota is simply the left's fear of Trump-like rallies. They know the energy. Mm-hmm. They know the influence. They know the sizes of the Trump rallies. Mm-hmm. Anything that the left and the Biden administration can do to discourage any Trump-like rallies, mm-hmm. they will do under the guise, as you said earlier, of COVID safety, et cetera.
It's a good point. It's a good point that they are going to kind of shift it and shake it up a little in that regard. You know, that could be an issue. Maybe we could fix this in just one big might be able to fix this in one big fell swoop. You know, August 6th to the 15th is Sturgis. Christy Noem could certainly arrange some kind of a big to-do out there at Sturgis out there in South Dakota.
Absolutely.
And the president could probably come in, and you could have Rolling Thunder come in there, man.
Sure, and I think possibly if we want to have another connection, the pilot light may have been what just happened with the congressional elections in Texas.
Oh, good point. That's right. You saw that. I think the word for that, what we just watched, was a repudiation. I think that was a repudiation. And I think they're getting a little nervous now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One other thing, Brad, I
sure.
just happen to think of woke being an acronym. How about we overkill everything?
No, that's pretty good. You know what? That's a pretty good one, Bob. Be safe out there. I appreciate you checking in. That's a lot to think about. You know what? This has got the wheels turning in my head. So the question then becomes, all right, if we're going to celebrate Independence Day on July the 4th, right? I always like to refer to it as Independence Day. So if we're going to celebrate and commemorate Independence Day on the 4th of July, well, why is a sovereign governor in the state of South Dakota having to ask permission to do fireworks from the great federal government? I know why, because Mount Rushmore's on, it's on federal land, and the Department of the Interior and the USDA and probably the NEA and probably the Education Department, yada, yada, yada. They got to be consulted. Could you do it adjacent or nearby?
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom! That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
Think about News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterville Show. 704-570-1110 is our number. Mexico is angry. Mexico is angry at the Biden administration for the immigration moves that they have basically pulled off. And here's the problem, essentially. When the Biden administration signed the executive order that essentially reopened the migrant route to come into the United States, what they did was, what's the word I'm looking for? They freaked out the guy who is the president of Mexico. Because, you see, politics is one of these things where you don't usually want to zig and zag the wheel of diplomacy violently. You want to kind of transition gently. You don't want to go hard left, hard right. And so after 4 years of Donald Trump at the helm of the U.S. foreign policy establishment, with his policy being don't come up through Mexico to the United States because you're going to have to remain in Mexico, what you essentially had created was a deterrent effect. And AMLO, that is the president of Mexico, had brought about military security down at the border with Guatemala and had used some along the Mexican frontier with the United States as well. And so the system seemed to be working okay. They didn't have a flood of migrants coming up into Mexico. Well, when Joe Biden signed that executive order that was carefully crafted by Ronnie Klain and his team of open border types, well, suddenly you had essentially a radical change in policy that then led to a massive flow of migrants coming up to the border with Mexico. Now, here's where it gets even more complicated, because Kamala Harris who I think had a conversation with the president of Mexico a couple of weeks ago to celebrate Arbor Day, but didn't talk about border security, has apparently been having conversations with the president of Guatemala, a guy by the name of Alejandro Jamete. Alejandro Jamete was talking with Vice President Harris, and during a meeting with him, she announced that she was going to give $310 million in additional U.S. aid for humanitarian relief and food insecurity support for that part of Central America. For years, the United States has thrown money at the situation facing residents of impoverished and corrupt Central American countries to prevent them from leaving. So we send a bunch of money down into Central America. We rely on crooked and corrupt politicians and power brokers and gang leaders to parse out those dollars or pesos. And then you say, okay, so we're giving you all this money. We don't want to see a big migrant caravan of people coming up. Here's the problem. That's what we've done for years. And for years, we've had inflows of migrants coming up into the United States. You had it back during the Obama-Biden administration in 2013 and 2014. That's how you had the kids in cages scandals originally break out. Now, here's the problem. Kamala Harris, and I'm not surprised that she would have such a bad idea as to say, here's $310 million, a third of a billion dollars for Guatemala. You just kind of use this money to keep the people down there. What's the negative effect of that? Well, many migration experts question the entire premise of deterring migration through development, you know, development assistance money. And they argue that what happens is when you take $310 million and you send it to Guatemala, suddenly people have money in their pocket. What do you do when you have money in your pocket? Okay, think about the stimulus here, right? You've got people getting stimulus checks. Money's in their pocket. Some people are using it to pay their rent. Some people are using it to pay for food. Some people are paying for a number of things in that way. But down there, $310 million goes a very, very long way. Guatemala is a very poor country. So what do you end up having? You end up having the money go into the pockets of the people who are incredibly poor, who would otherwise not have that money in their pockets. And what do? They take the money and they hire coyotes. They take the money and they go, honey, we've got the money. We've got the time. Let's go honky tonkin' and we'll have a time. We're gonna head on up the road to the United States because now we've got money. See, we had no money. Now we have money. And I know we were talking about maybe going to, you know, some place to go visit somebody. We're going to go to the United States and get the big dime hookup up there in the United States. And so you actually have in the vice president of the United States somebody who has handed a third of a billion dollars to a very poor country that's going to give it to the people of the country. And they're then going to decide they want to come up here. How's that working? Because that's what we've done for a long time. It's really it's an incredible tale. It's an incredible, incredible tale. Let's go to Jason next up. Jason, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today, sir?
I love you, Brett Winterbull. I love WBT.
Thank you.
And I don't know about this Alejandro Jamete. I don't know if I love him.
Alejandro Jamete.
I said, well, yeah, that's close enough. Anyway, I've got the theory on no fireworks, no motorcycles, because if no motorcycles, no fireworks are going to be allowed because of those damn dogs. It's because when those fireworks go off, and those motorcycles go out, that dog's going to panic and bite somebody. And the authorities are going to say they have to put him to sleep.
No, they're not going to do that. No, they can't do that because that's the first dog, and he's already had some issues. He's already had, he's on two strikes. I think he's on two strikes, right?
Well, the thing is, they're going to say, who are we putting to sleep, the dog or Joe?
Negative, no, wrong-o, NDT, no death talk, stop that. Here's the thing. What they're going to do is they're going to put them out on the farm. But I do agree with your theory, your original theory. About, I mean, I know you love me and you love the station, but I do agree with your original theory. When you have Harleys going full pipes and you have fireworks going off, although I don't think there's any plan for Rolling Thunder to have fireworks going off in D.C., these would be fireworks going off way over in South Dakota at Mount Rushmore, and you have motorcycles there in D.C., that will make the dogs go crazy. Those dogs will go absolutely bonker nutso. And so we don't want to, you know what, I like the dogs. I like dogs a lot, and it's a shame that come 4th of July, they just absolutely lose their mind and chew up your couch. But that's not going to stop me from lighting M80s off. News talk.
One morning, you just walk in with a bag of everyone's faves from McDonald's, drop it on the counter, and say, breakfast is on me. Boom. That's the power of saving money on the McDonald's app. Hope you can handle all that. Save money with the app. At participating McDonald's, must opt into rewards.
1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterble Show. Mark Garrison's got Charlotte at 6 coming up here, and just a matter of minutes. Hello, Mark Garrison.
Hello there. You've been having fun this afternoon?
Been having a lot of. We've had a lot of very interesting phone calls, takes, and thoughts.
I heard that last guy.
I think the weather brings it out, my friend. You know what I'm saying?
Those are the good calls, though. The nuts, you know.
I love those guys.
Yeah.
Come on, that's the backbone.
That's right.
So, what do we got coming? We got any nuttiness coming up on Charlotte?
You know, we do. President Biden was begging people to take the vaccine today at his press conference because there's so much reluctance. But we're going to talk to a local guy at 6 o'clock who did not get the shot and told me he wishes he had. He is struggling with COVID-19.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, having a tough time. We'll talk to him at 6:05. A lot of people know who he is. CMS continues to stonewall us on whether they might change and let parents let parents watch their kids in school plays. So far, they're not budging, and when we ask about it, they don't even bother to answer.
You know, I have a 10-second confession. You know, during the pandemic, the height of the pandemic, my daughter was part of a play over at Belmont Abbey.
And you didn't go?
I went.
Oh, good for you.
We were allowed to go. They allowed 10 people in like a 100-seat auditorium.
Oh, wow.
And so parents did it on shifts. It was great. I hope they are able to do the plays.
Well, the thing that's so goofy about CMS's position on this is it flies in the face of what the governor says they can do.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Meantime, graduation controversy in Cabarrus County. They're doing it again at the Speedway, but parents are going, look, we don't want to drive by pit stop graduation.
So, I hope not. That would be great.
They're trying to work something out there. And at 6:35, Dirty Restaurant Tuesday, restaurant with one of the lowest scores we've seen in a while.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, and we've got a special food critic guest tonight because TJ's off.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte's loneliest bachelor, Brett Jensen. I'm sorry. He's most eligible bachelor.
Most eligible. That's what he wanted. Most eligible. This is going to be great. I'm looking forward to it. Can I ask you one last question?
Absolutely.
Who won last night in the news off?
Anna tied with Josh.
Wow.
Yeah. Josh brought it.
You don't go to sudden death at that one and start asking.
You know, we really I'm going to have to start bringing tiebreaker questions in because these guys are they're getting pretty good.
Good stuff. Yeah. All right, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, sir.
Thanks. Mark Garrison's got Charlotte at 6 coming up here. He's going to keep you company all the way home, get you up to date on all the big important stories. I'm dying to know what that restaurant is that's got one of the lowest scores of all time. It's just unbelievable. Jeff is up next. Hello, Jeff. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brett, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call, and
thanks
for what you do here in Charlotte, and also on Rush's show.
Oh, thank you, sir. That's very kind of you.
Just didn't know if you had heard that, I can't remember his name, the guy that won the Kentucky Derby.
Is it Bob Baffert?
No, he actually declined an invitation to the White House, and they asked him why, and he said, well, if I wanted to see a horse's ass, I'd have finished
it. My gosh, jeez. Nice one, Jeff. Da-da-da-da. What do we give that? What do we give that on a 1 to 5? Yeah. That was you walked me right into it. I can't lie to you. You walked me right into it. So by now you no doubt know about the breakup of Bill and Melinda Gates. And, you know, there was no prenup there. There's no prenup. So she's going to be able to, get the money that's due her in this regard. But now we're finding out some interesting stuff here. And I'm not one of these people to get into the purient kind of things, the scandalous, tawdry nature of things. But apparently Bill Gates took getaways with his ex-girlfriend after he got married. With permission. She gave him a hall pass, apparently. After marrying his wife, Bill Gates would spend a long weekend every year at a cozy beach cottage in North Carolina. North Carolina's for lovers, I guess. With his old, no, that's Virginia. With his old girlfriend. But that's rude. Wait, do you think they mean like ex-girlfriend or old girlfriend as in chronological age? I don't know. The billionaire Microsoft founder made sure the bizarre arrangement was part of the deal when he married Melinda in 1994. We can play putt-putt while discussing biotechnology, Gates said of his private getaways with fellow nerd techie and ex Anne Winblad. Winblad, who's now happily married to actor Kevin Kline's detective brother Alex Kline. A source told the New York Post, Gates even sought Winblad's approval before proposing to his wife. Excuse me. When I was off on my own thinking about marrying Melinda, I called Anne, asked her for her approval. Not advice, approval. Adding that Winblad gave the other woman the thumbs up. Winblad recalled, I said she'd be a good match for him because she had intellectual stamina. Gates, who announced that they're splitting after 27 years, revealed that Winblad started taking an annual trip to his ex's Outer Banks home. When they began dating in 1984, the meeting at a computer conference. Okay, here, let me say this. Because I'm not interested in, like, you know, the tawdry nature of things. But let me make an observation here. Knowing what you know about Bill Gates, like just knowing what you know about Bill Gates, who do you think got the better part of the deal? Honestly, I think the wife got the better part of the deal. She sends him out there on the Outer Banks for a couple of weeks at a time. She's all like, why don't you head out to the Outer Banks? I'm going to sit home and I'm going to watch Lifetime movies and I'm going to eat a bucket of chicken and I'm going to eat bonbons and I'm going to enjoy a 12-pack of Bartles and James and all kinds of stuff and order pay-per-view and all that kind of stuff. But the question then becomes, as night follows day, if you're sending your husband out to the Outer Banks with the ex-girlfriend, what, pray tell, may be going on at home? See, I prefer not to assume the tawdriness. I prefer to assume peace and quiet because I get the impression Bill Gates, he's a handful. I mean, he looks to me, honestly, he's a tinkerer. You know he's tinkering with stuff all the time. I'll bet they got all kinds of, like, Nest cameras in the house. He's always tweaking the light. The light is too bright. The fan is too fast. He's up there. He's got an Allen wrench in one hand, and he's got a voltmeter in the other. And he's saying, you know, it turns out we're down 16% on this circuit. I bet I can improve it. And the next thing you know, he takes the entire system down because he's a tinkerer. He's worth $130 billion, and this guy fancies himself a latter-day Bob Vila. Oh, I don't think we need to go to all the trouble of replacing the kitchen faucet. Let me work on that. Bill, you know what? The flight leaves in 2 hours, and you and Winblad got to get out there to the Outer Banks. What say you? Hit the road, Jack, and, well, come back, because I'm going to want a piece of that action. $130 billion worth. No prenup. All right, that's going to do it for me. Thank you to Chris. Thank you to Josh. Thank you to Anna. And, of course, Boomer, Mark Garrison, and Brett Jensen. Bo Thompson will be in tomorrow on the Bo Thompson Morning Show. I'm Brett Witterbolt. News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT.